Okay, in this optional talk, I want to describe the work of. Is there a pointer somewhere? The work of the results of two papers in collaboration with Gary Horovitz and Kengo Maeda on cosmic censorship violation in string theory and in particular in asymptotic ADS spaces. The outline of the talk is the following. I will first remind you about the cosmic censorship hypothesis itself. Then I'll show that it is violated in some field theories in asymptotic ADS spaces, and even in field theories that arise in the low energy limit of string theory. Again with asymptotic ADS boundary conditions. And then finally, I comment on how our results may shed light on the study of cosmological singularities. So what is the cosmic censorship hypothesis all about? Well, the singularity theorems of Hawking and Penrose prove that under certain conditions, singularities must form. But they give rather little information about what actually happens. And in particular, they do not prove that gravitational collapse necessarily leads to the formation of a black hole, and not, for instance, instead to a naked singularity, which could be visible to a distance observer. But of course, in the known spherical collapse example, we know that a black hole forms, and we know that it's stable against small perturbations, and it has been proven very hard to find a counterexample to this scenario, and that led Penrose to suggest that perhaps nature in some sense censors these singularities. And so in 1969, Penrose proposed what's now known as the cosmic censorship conjecture, stating that generic smooth initial data with reasonable matter cannot form naked singularities. And despite the fact that our black hole theories are based on the validity of this hypothesis, we are still very far from a complete proof. A proof that states precisely under which conditions a cosmic censorship theorem can hold, or even if it holds at all in our universe. But over the years, this statement has been refined, of course, and in particular, this genericity condition is important, as well as the fact that your matter must be reasonable, for instance, that it should not be singular in flat space or without gravity. So otherwise, it's easy to find counterexamples.
What does it mean reasonable?
Well, that's the whole issue, right? Does cosmic censorship hold under conditions on the matter which are reasonable to impose in our actual universe, or from a more general perspective? And one condition that is certain you have to impose is that the matter should not be singular without gravity. And in fact, our work could be viewed as further restricting the nature of a possible cosmic censorship theorem, in that what I will show you is that there exist field theories that admit a positive energy theorem in asymptotic area spaces, but which violate cosmic censorship. So this means that requiring a positive energy theorem is not reasonable enough, basically. Just to remind you, the positive energy theorem states that the total energy of all non-singular initial data is positive and vanishes only even only if the metric is, in this case, perfect ADS. So the reason it's easier to violate cosmic censorship in asymptotic anti-de Sitter spaces is, I will come back to the issue of cosmic censorship in asymptotically flat space at the end of my talk, but the reason it's easier in asymptotic anti-de Sitter space, there are actually two reasons for it, and one is that simply a black hole of a given size is much more massive in asymptotic anti-de Sitter space than it is in asymptotic flat space. And that follows immediately from the fact that we have an extra factor due to the negative cosmological constant in the metric for a Schwarzschild anti-de Sitter black hole. So it's in a sense harder to form black holes in asymptotic anti-de Sitter space.
So if the solution is a singularity in the space is negative cosmological constant and is the mass, right? So it's a black hole in anti-de Sitter.
Yes, that's what I just wrote. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a sphere for the certain parameters. There's no singularity.
No, I'm not yet talking about naked singularities. I'm just outlining my motivations for working in asymptotic anti-de Sitter space. The second reason one might think that it's easier to violate cosmic censorship in anti-de Sitter space is that there's a qualitatively different way to form singularities. Consider, for instance, a gravity coupled to a scalar field with a potential that has a negative minimum. If you have an initial space-like surface where phi is zero, then the solution will be just perfect anti-de Sitter space, which can be written as a k minus one open Robertson-Walker universe, and phi will remain zero, and the scale factor behaves as a cosine. When the scale factor becomes zero, this is just a coordinate singularity. However, when the field deviates from the minimum, for instance, take initial data where phi is epsilon in some region, then the coordinate singularity turns into a curvature singularity. So one can make use of the negative energy density, the negative energy really, to produce singularities. This is not unlike the usual story in vacuum decay, where if one ADS state decays into another ADS state, you generically tunnel to a Big Crunch and not to the new ADS state. I emphasized from the beginning that we will be considering theories that admit a positive energy theorem, and therefore there are no regular instantons. The ADS states I will be talking about are stable, and they cannot decay through regular instanton processes. But our configurations will have certain similarities. Okay, so these two features led us to consider the following theory. And now I will. So consider gravity coupled to a scalar field again, with a potential that has a true and a false vacuum, both with a negative cosmological constant. And as boundary conditions at infinity, we take the field to go to the false vacuum at phi 1. So the previous discussion suggests that one way you might try to violate cosmic censorship is to build up to have a configuration with a large central region where phi probes the true minimum of the potential, but sits not exactly at the true minimum. And then a transition region in which phi crosses the barrier of the potential in order for the asymptotic conditions to be satisfied. So phi should go to the false vacuum at infinity. Then if this region is approximately homogeneous, a singularity will develop. For spherically symmetric configurations like this, and for time-independent data, it is easy to solve the constraint equations and to compute the total mass, which is just the limit when r goes to infinity of the mass parameter that enters in the metric. Now it's possible to tune the potential in such a way that all configurations that probe this central region were around the true minimum, such that all those configurations have positive mass. And tuning consists of tuning during the height of the barrier or tuning the distance between these two vacua. It's basically a tuning of one parameter in the potential. And the reason one can still achieve a positive energy theorem in this way, for these theories, is that although you might think, well, you can build up a lot of negative energy compared to this state in some central region, but all this negative energy density is screened by the gradient energy in the transition region when phi moves from the true minimum to the false vacuum. And in fact, by doing the variational problem, one can find the precise criterion on the potential in order for the positive energy theorem just to be satisfied. So there's a clear transition point when you raise or lower the barrier. And it turns out that for potentials that are in some sense close to this transition point, that the mass of the configuration that probes this region and goes asymptotically to the false vacuum, that the mass of this configuration grows linearly with a radius R1, and R1 is the radius at which the field reaches the false vacuum. So that's for potentials that are close to that transition point of either having or not having a positive energy theorem. And that particular configuration that in some sense minimizes the mass looks very much like the configuration I was describing. So it's approximately homogeneous over a large region, and then there's a sort of fairly narrow transition region before it reaches the false vacuum. And the field is zero. The field sits at the minimum only at the origin of ADS. So it's away from the origin, it's never in the minimum. Okay, and so the central region collapses, and the question now is there enough mass for theories close to this transition point in order to enclose the singular region that will form from the evolution in the central region, to enclose that singular region by a black hole? So schematically, the evolution looks like this. The central region, where the field is approximately homogeneous, collapses to a singularity. Here, where the field was just sitting in a false vacuum, it's pure ADS. And here, we don't really know, but for the moment, we don't really care. The point is that we know for sure that in the domain of dependency of the central region, a singularity forms. Now, suppose a black hole forms, because the area theorem for black holes still holds if the potential is negative. This means that if our data eventually settle down to a static black hole, the radius of the event horizon of that black hole must be larger, which the event horizon is an outgoing null surface. If there were an event horizon here, it must certainly be larger than the radius Rs on the initial surface, because it has to enclose the whole singular region. Well, but because the total mass we've just computed, the total mass is conserved, this requires an initial mass, which is certainly of the order of Rs cubed. But one can also show that Rs is proportional to R1, the radius at which the field reaches the false vacuum on the initial surface. And therefore, at least for some initial data, namely the data that are close to the configurations that optimize, that minimize the mass, at least for some initial data, we have that the mass grows linearly with R1, and that yields a contradiction. So the conclusion is that at least some initial data evolve to a singularity, and that that singular region cannot be contained inside the black hole. So the end point of the singularity that forms must therefore necessarily be naked. Because, well, I claim I've given you, strictly speaking, a specific initial configuration for which there is a naked singularity, but I claim there is an open set precisely because there's such a large discrepancy between the available mass and the required mass, at least for large R1.
This really requires showing that RS is supported
R1,
right? This
RS is?
That RS is supported R1.
No, it only requires showing that RS is linear to R1. Yeah.
RS is R1 to the power 1/3.
Yeah. That's right. Okay. I didn't show this here, but we showed that in our paper, and I can discuss that later. But that's crucial. That's right. Okay. So before I conclude this section, let me make a few comments. First of all, I've assumed the unique evolution to a static black hole was the Schwarzschild anti-de-Sitter black hole. But there also exist hairy black holes. But the positive energy theorem implies that these hairy black holes, which you might think you could evolve to, are actually more massive and therefore are ruled out by the same argument I just gave you. Secondly, it turns out we can say something about the endpoint of the singularity, because to avoid a contradiction with the Reich-Hardouri equation, it turns out the singularity must be metrically a sphere. This is because if the area of the null surface that hits the endpoint of the singularity, if the area were to shrink to zero size, then it's certainly likely that the area of the null surface that starts out at a slightly larger radius on our initial surface, when it passes the singularity, also shrinks, and then when it expands further to infinity, expands again. But that contradicts the Reich-Hardouri equation, and therefore, although here there's a strong curvature singularity, it seems as that the singularity becomes weaker as it goes out. So we expect the singularity to go out a little bit out of the domain of dependency of the central region. And when it goes out, we expect it to become weaker. And then there's a somewhat controversial issue, which is the question whether the singularity really ends. So far, I have not shown you why it should end. One might think, well, it could become time-like, or it could cut off all space and make it all the way out to the boundary. Well, we have no proof of this, but we expect that this is the most likely outcome. Well, first of all, the fact that it becomes time-like, classically you can't discuss, because here you would need the boundary conditions in the space-like, from the region where the singularity is space-like, and so clearly, classically, you don't know what those boundary conditions are. So whether it ends or time-like is classically somewhat equivalent. Now the singularity could make it out to infinity, as especially Stephen has suggested. Well, we have no proof that it doesn't, but somehow we don't expect the collapse of a finite mass configuration with compact support to destroy the whole space. That's still somewhat an open issue. Surely that can be settled numerically. These spherically symmetric configurations are not difficult problems for numerical relativity. So that concludes the first result. And that leads, obviously, to a number of new fascinating questions. One of them being, does cosmic censorship hold in the low energy limit of string theory, again with ADS boundary conditions? Can we do the same thing with potentials that come from string theory? And the answer turns out to be yes. Well, okay, the answer to this question turns out to be no. But and our strategy will be very similar. So we again look for potentials, now supergravity potentials, that are in some sense close to violating a positive energy theorem. And then we again look for configurations with a large central region that collapses and forms singularities that cannot be contained in a black hole. So what is the context that we'll be working in? Well, the low energy limit of string theory with ADS5 cross S5 boundary conditions is D equals 5 and equals 8 supergravity. Now, the spectrum of this compactification contains 5 scalars with masses that saturate the Bright-Noether-Friedman bound. Bright-Noether-Friedman bound is a bound that ensures the stability of the maximally supersymmetric ADS state. If you had a scalar that with a mass that were lower than the Bright-Noether-Friedman bound, there would certainly be no positive energy theorem, and the ADS state would be unstable. But supersymmetry guarantees there are no such scalars. But obviously, because we have scalars in D equals 5 and equals 8 supergravity that saturate a bound, you might think, well, these could be good candidates to violate cosmic censorship. And they turn out to be. So these 5 scalars, perturbatively, they all satisfy the free wave equation with a mass saturating the Bright-Noether-Friedman bound. But non-perturbatively, they generally act as a source for each other. Except one of the 5, which does not act as a source, and so it's consistent to set all the 4 others to 0, and as a start, consider configurations involving only a non-trivial profile for this 5th scalar. That's again a particular configuration I'm talking about now. One can, after the analysis is done, one can then again argue how small perturbations influence the results. It turns out the potential for this 5th scalar that decouples, well, it saturates the Bright-Noether-Friedman bound here, and then it falls off exponentially away from zero. Now, there's an important difference with the previous case, which is that here, asymptotically, we are tending to a local maximum and not a local minimum. And therefore, because the mass around the maximum is negative, it pays to move slowly up the potential hill and not to, in order to lower the total mass or to sort of lower the gradient energy involved in the configuration. Instead of having a configuration that sort of quickly goes through this transition region that I described earlier. Now, you can't go too slowly, because if you go too slowly, then the total mass will diverge, and the space is in no sense asymptotically ADS. So it turns out that the slowest asymptotic fall-off for these fields that saturate the Bright-Noether-Friedman bound, the slowest asymptotic fall-off that gives a finite mass is that they go as 1 over r squared. We're in 5 dimensions. And that's exactly the fall-off you recognize from the individual modes of the free wave equation that correspond to the non-trivial CFT states. Sorry? No. I'm again looking about what could be a good configuration on a space-like surface that evolves to a naked singularity. Just as before, the setup is entirely similar. So that naturally leads to the following, to consider the following configuration on a space-like surface with a field slowly moving to the top of the potential asymptotically and being constant in a large region up to radius R0. Then we know for sure that that in the domain of dependency of this homogeneous region, again, a singularity will form in a time of the order of the ADS radius. Okay, I won't go into details here, but one can again show that there is not enough mass to enclose this whole singular region by an event horizon, and one can again show that if you turn on the other fields in d equals 5 and equals 8 with a sufficiently small amplitude, or make small deviations from the spherical symmetry, that again you will produce trapped surfaces, and necessarily a singularity will form in the domain of dependency of this central region. And therefore we claim that, just said before, we have a generic cosmic censorship violation, at least in the d equals 5 and equals 8 supergravity. One may...
Is the scaling of the mass and the radius the same as it was in the other case?
No. Well, yeah, the mass, if you were to form a black hole, that's precisely the same. But the mass of this configuration, there's a subtlety involved with that, which is, it's not actually positive, it's negative. And either we will discuss this now, or we can discuss this later, as you wish. The reason that it's not in conflict with the positive energy theorems is that the positive energy theorems, if for fields or for theories that have scalars saturating the Brayton-Miller-Friedman bound, do not apply to the usual ADM mass or the usual ADS mass, but they guarantee the positivity of the usual mass plus another surface term. And it's only that combination that needs to be positive if you have fields that saturate the Brayton-Miller-Friedman bound. Yeah, a technical note, one can lift our solutions to solutions of the 10T2B supergravity, and that lifting shows that both the 5 sphere and the ADS part of the metric develop a singularity at the same time. So these scalars that saturate the bound in the d equals 5 and equals 8 supergravity correspond to L equals 2 modes on the 5 sphere.
Same time, you mean this for the same conditions?
Sorry?
You didn't follow the time evolution of these solutions. You really mean the same time that the singularity forms at the same cosmic time?
Yes, at the same value for T in the metric. Yeah. The metric, the 10D metric, has a Kastner-like form.
Oh, okay.
And both the 5 sphere and the ADS part. Okay, so these are our main results. I will conclude with two issues one can now look at, or one can study. And the first obvious issue that arises is, what about cosmic censorship, or what about the cosmic censorship hypothesis in asymptotically flat space? It's certainly a much more delicate issue there, because the mass of a black hole of a given grows linearly with its radius. So the wide discrepancy that we have in ADS certainly does not work in asymptotically flat spaces, and it's much more tricky. But we think that with theories that satisfy a positive energy theorem, but have, on the other hand, a region where the potential becomes negative, and so you can have regions again with negative energy density, we think it might still be possible in even more fine-tuned theories to find examples of cosmic censorship violation. We outlined a numerical program in our paper in order to test that idea. Now, at that point, you may argue, well, maybe it's just not enough, or maybe it's just not reasonable to simply require a positive energy theorem. Why should we not say, well, we should impose an energy condition on the matter, and that would get rid of all these bizarre phenomena? Well, I want to argue against that for the following reason. If our world is described by string theory, then we know that from a four-dimensional point of view, many Calabi-Yau compactifications contain fields with potentials that have negative regions. That's something that Gary Kenho and I showed earlier this year. Now, I think this should imply that the proper context to discuss the validity of the cosmic centership hypothesis in our actual universe should be the requirement of a positive energy theorem. It's too strong to impose a further condition on the matter. And therefore, it's an important outstanding question, I think, to what extent whether there are counterexamples in asymptotically flat space that actually to the cosmic centership. And then finally, let me comment on how our results may shed light on the study of cosmological singularities. So, as you saw, our singularities are space-like, at least in some central region. So in some sense, and we had time-symmetric initial data, so in some sense our complete solutions look like part of a cosmology which starts out with a Big Bang and ends in a Big Crunch. And that cosmology is embedded in an asymptotic anti-de Sitter space. Now this means that we may be able to use ADS-CFT to learn something about these solutions, and in particular, it may be that the dual field theory description tells us something about the way these singularities are resolved in the full string theory. Now I have nothing other than speculations to say about this. And it's not even clear there is a dual description, but an obvious question is, of course, precisely how these singularities are resolved in the full string theory, and whether, well, David has suggested even the classical string theory may resolve these singularities, although again it's not clear what that means or what whether there is a metric corresponding to the situation. But naively, it looks like, well, we have a finite mass state at this t equals zero surface, and naively it looks, well, this should map into some CFT state, and we should be able to evolve this. And because there's a finite energy state, naively it looks like this should not become singular, but who knows? Now, if the singularities are resolved in the dual field theory, then of course a very interesting question arises. Because then in principle, we should be able to understand how these are resolved and how and what the metric is that corresponds to the CFT. In particular, is it so that the naked singularity only lasts an instant, or does the metric corresponding to the CFT only has a semi-classical interpretation or description outside a finite region after the singularity? So there's the question of a bounce you can ask, whether cosmological universes can bounce, in the sense that if the naked singularity only lasts an instant, then one might argue, well, there is some kind of bounce. And so that might be that even in the large n limit you could obtain some answer. But if we turn on quantum corrections, I'm wondering whether we should even expect a unique answer. Maybe really what we should be doing here is describing that by some wave function with different branches, and then it's not clear to me that the resolution is the same as in the large n limit, or whether there is even a unique answer to this question. So that's all for the future. Thank you.
Okay, we thank Thomas for ending before time, and there's lots of time for questions. So we start with Tom because...
Thomas, if I could ask the question that I asked, if I take the positive mass, if I take the positive mass, how does that scale radius? I mean, have the same discrepancy of powers of the radius that you had in the No, no, there's a positive mass you can define, which is this extra boundary term added on. So you can ask how much this configuration has compared to the black
hole. Sure, yeah. Purely from the positive mass, you will not be able to derive a contradiction. The positive mass would be, so remember the configurations I had, the field was constant. So that's A over R naught squared, and here was A over R squared. The usual mass, which follows from computing the total mass from the metric, is minus A squared.
Right.
The positive mass, the modified mass, so to speak, is plus A squared. And it turns out that it's sufficient in order not to be able to derive a contradiction. So one would actually need to check the evolution and see what happens.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, it seems to me, I mean, in some sense, we've known for a long time of solutions of string theory that with this general shape. So like if you take there are many, you know, brain metrics that are singular, considered as supergravity metrics. And so you could take like a spherical D2 brain, and then you could just let it self-annihilate, you know, it collapses, it radiates away into stuff. And then you time reverse that. And that's something which is matter coming in and produces the spherical singularity coming out. And so those things exist, and somehow what you're adding is you're saying this is a much more generic thing. You might have criticized what I just said to say, well, that's a very special outgoing state, the radiation from this brain, and you have to make a very special tuning to get the stuff to come in. And now this is a much more generic construction of a singularity. Would that be a fair statement?
Oh, you could. Well, I have the option to pass it on, isn't it?
Yes. You have at least a chance to ask.
Right. Well, the genericity of initial data is crucial, certainly from a classical GR point of view in discussing cosmic censorship. But it may be that what you describe is correct. I wasn't aware of any example that in string theory that really produces naked singularities, but.
If I could just comment, I think what you're describing is really very different. If you take a spherical D2 brain and just let it collapse, that's going to form a black hole. There's no reason when you include the back reaction that you just don't form an ordinary horizon around this energy. So it actually is quite unusual, I think, to have non-singular initial conditions evolve to singularities which cannot be inside black hole horizons. And that was the key to this argument.
One more there. I can't really reach that.
Okay, I want to step back for a second to the jar picture from the world of string theory. There is no question that there is a singularity going to form in the center of the thing, but what is not obvious to me is that it's going to stay naked. One of the possible outcomes you mentioned is just going to swallow up the whole space-time and just become a space-like singularity at the end of the space-time. Now, this is you said this is unlikely, but I would like to hear a little bit more of your reasons for this. And in particular, so this is a general question. And particular thing is, in your argument, you depend on mass being conserved. If you have fluxes in the thing, in principle, mass inside any spherical shell will change if you have out flux. So, and the situation is certainly non-static because you have collapse. So, can you comment on that as well?
Sure. Well, the flux is vanishing clearly. We impose one. Strictly speaking, when you evolve in ADS space, you impose boundary conditions so that the flux vanishes. Well, with regard to your first question, I said we don't have a proof that the singularity doesn't extend to infinity. The reason that we expect it doesn't is, basically we expect the evolution far away from the central region to be governed by small perturbations around the ADS, which have a decaying mode so which decay towards the boundary and which are oscillating around the maximum or the minimum of the potential. And if then in the central region something violent happens, well, we know it happens, but we expect the effect of that to be diluted or to be decaying once it reaches, when it reaches the boundary. That's the only intuitive explanation we have, unless Gary wants to add something.
Not
that
well. One of the things I wanted to ask is, I mean, you said hairy black holes have more mass than the, I guess, the pure ADS black hole with the,
hairy black holes of the same size.
Yeah, okay, but I mean, is that something that you've proven? I mean, because with this negative energy density, it's not obvious.
Yes, yes, I agree. We've not proven that in general, but we've proven that for the specific potential we were considering. So we look for the hairy black hole with the same size and we compute its mass. But it would be interesting, as you say, to find a general characterization of that.
Yes.
Wouldn't you expect that the energy that is conserved is the energy of the field theory that is positive and not the energy that you are defining that is negative?
Sure. They're both conserved.
Yeah, that's right. So is that there? So you think there would be two conserved quantities, not only one in this problem?
Well, the modified energy, which corresponds to the field theory energy, is certainly conserved in all circumstances. The energy that we obtain by computing the total mass from the metric is only conserved if you impose the vanishing flux condition.
More questions?
Just to follow up, is anybody investigating in detail whether those vanishing flux conditions are consistent with the other boundary conditions you might wish to impose? Whether they're in fact dynamically preserved, if you have the right fall off on the initial data surface?
If I understand correctly, in order to have this flux vanish, you want the amplitude of the field to be constant, right?
That's right.
But wouldn't the amplitude, I think that if you consider simple solutions, let's say the simplest linearized solution of this system, the amplitude of this field goes like a cosine of time.
Sure.
Right? Because it has some energy of order one in ADS units.
Yeah, yeah.
And so a real, if you have an initial real profile for the field, it will go like cosine.
Then there would not be a vanishing flux.
Yeah, that's right. But this is the natural ADS. So the boundary condition we naturally want to impose in ADS is the one which leads to solutions with oscillate in this form.
Yes.
Right. So if we impose this kind of solution, there won't be vanishing flux, and the energy that will be conserved will be the field theory energy.
Yes.
That will lead to positive, to a black hole that can encompass the singularity.
No, that I don't agree with. How do you know? You should look at the evolution.
No, we look at the evolution and, we communicate by email, and there was a consensus that, yeah.
No.
I was wondering, did you answer Don's question?
I had nothing to say, but...
Okay.
Maybe you could answer Don's question.
Okay, so, I mean, I would just make a couple of comments. First of all, if the energy is in some sense oscillating between this large positive and large negative energy, it is not, I agree with Thomas, I mean, it's not at all clear that you will form a black hole. I mean, what we checked is that if the mass was positive and static and stayed there for all time, you would clearly have enough mass to form a black hole. But if it's oscillating on an ADS timescale, it's not at all clear that you'll form a black hole. Certainly, once you form the black hole, you don't expect the mass to be able to oscillate back to some large negative answer. Second of all, I find it very unphysical that you have this sort of huge flux of energy coming in that's allowing the total mass, the gravitational mass that you see asymptotically, to oscillate between some large positive and negative thing. I mean, what's the source of all this energy coming in? The third comment is that in any numerical simulation, and I should mention that there are numerical relativists now simulating these type of evolutions. In any numerical calculation, you put boundary conditions at some large finite radius. And so what they do is they fix the value of the field at some large radius, and that's what we propose to do. If you fix the field at some large radius, then the energy is conserved, both energies are conserved, and you don't have this oscillation.
Strictly speaking, if you work with the cutoff, which is what Gary was saying, then the unique static black hole you tend to has, of course, a little bit of hair, because the field is not vanishing at the cutoff. If you take the cutoff away, or if you take it to larger radius, then that black hole solution tends to the Schwarzschild area solution. So I think with the cutoff, the problem is well defined. I agree there is a subtlety if you take away the cutoff. And the subtlety comes from integrating a vanishing field over an infinite volume.
Okay, so I propose that we thank Thomas again and continue the discussion privately. Thank you, and thank Thibault.